started part of Vayigash. These are psukim that everybody knows. Remember them from when you were a kid. Vayomar Paro Yaakov, Paro said to Yaakov, Kami Yamei Shnei Chayechem. This is after everything had happened. Yosef had already revealed himself to the brothers. Everything had happened with all the Shvatim. Yaakov Avinu has decided, I'm going to go down to Mitzrayim. It's time for me to go down to Mitzrayim and to see Yosef. And he comes down. Yosef Tzadik does the whole preparation, getting him to Goshen, getting everything. And he stands Yaakov in front of Paro. And the first thing that Paro says to him is, Kami Yamei Shnei Chayechem. How old are you? To which he answered, Vayomer Yaakov al Paro. Yaakov said to Paro, Yamei Shnei Migurai. The days of the years of my dwelling on this earth. Shloshim Ashan is 130 years. It says, Ma'at V'rayim Hayu Yamei Shnei Chayai. There were few in number and evil days. Tremendous amounts of ra that happened. Below Yisigu is Yamei Shnei Chayai Vosai, Yamei Migurayim. And my days have not reached the years and what my fathers were able to handle when they dwelled inside this earth. I'm nothing like that. Which sounds like, in the outset, it looks like Yaakov Avinu is complaining. And that's what we're going to see right now. First of all, what in the world is Paro thinking and asking such a question? You wouldn't do that. When I was a little kid, I remember one of the first things that my parents ever told me is you never ask people what their age is because they're usually going to, A, lie. And even if they're not going to lie, they're going to tell you that they're embarrassed by such a thing. You don't tell somebody something. They don't talk to people about their age. So it's not a proper question to ask. And it certainly is not something you expect from a great and powerful king. Not somebody who's grown up around among aristocrats, this is not something that you would normally ask. So what was he thinking over this? The Rishonim take one route that it seems that Yaakov did something wrong over here. The Sforno says that Paro was shocked. Egyptians didn't live this long. Makes sense. You look through the years of the pharaohs never lived past the age of 35 or 40. That doesn't say much. They could have been killed really early. But it was normal for them to die around the 35 or 40. To see a guy who's 130 in front of him, he couldn't hold himself back. Yaakov answers that he lived many years, but they were filled with pain and trouble. Unlike his father and his grandfather, they were filled with all these issues that he had. Now the Rashbam says that Yaakov looked a lot older than he actually was. Not that Paro was shocked by seeing it, but Yaakov looked terribly old. And Paro saw him as if he was hundreds of years old and was shocked. He was absolutely shocked and looked at him and said, I can't believe it, but I have to ask you this question. How old are you? You look like you're 700 years old. How could this be? To that, Yaakov's answer said, the reason why I look so old is because of the troubles that I had. Because of those troubles, therefore I look older than I am. The Ramban puts it together. He can't believe that Yaakov said this to Paro. But it must be, right, that he's putting them together. Yaakov outlived many of his people, the people that had lived in his time. Think about it. His wives had died years earlier, and they were years younger than when he got married to them. That had happened. And he was older than most of the people in his generation. And he even looked older than that. So he puts both answers together. He was older than most, and he looked older than he actually was. And Yaakov's answer is the combination of the both. So really, the Ramban puts together the Sforno and the Rashbam. That's the reason. Shonen. The Sforno, the Rashbam, the Ramban, all saying, you look so old, and the Ramban say, and the answer of Yaakov, you know, saying, yeah, I'm so old because of what happened. But Ravigdor Miller has a totally different derech over here. This, you'll see, it's the way of the Achronim to sort of look at the Chumash this way. Yaakov was not complaining. He was thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything he gave. That's what he did in Perek Lamed Beis. He thanked God for every moment of his life in Perek Lamed Beis. So it seems clear that this is different. He's stating a fact. I received less years and less prosperity, less good things than my father and my grandfather did, but I'm certainly happy with everything that I was granted. This is all part of a plan, Yaakov Avinu's plan, to make sure that Paro would let them live outside of Mitzrayim, let them live outside of Egypt. If he was this happy-go-lucky guy, that everything good happened to him, and especially the fact that the hunger stopped when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, if that happened, as the Midrashim say, he was afraid that Paro would make him live with him. Stay here, you're a good luck charm. We need you here. Yaakov Avinu wanted to show Paro, no. I've had a bad life. You want me elsewhere. You want me to stay out in the middle of Goshen where no one's going to see me. That's the perfect place for me. That way I'm going to have full authority over my family, said Yaakov Avinu to himself. And that way I don't have to worry about assimilating with the rest of the Egyptians. Let me stay away. So when Paro asked him, how old do you look? Yaakov Avinu purposely made himself look a little bit older. Purposely made himself look a little bit more bent over in order to get the land of Goshen to make sure Paro thought something, which was not necessarily true. It was something that was there. He still said the words Ma'at V'rayim, but he says Ma'at V'rayim because this is what I need in order to get to Goshen. He needed that to be able to get to what he wanted. The Chassam Sofer thought the same way. Chassam Sofer says the same thing that Ravigdor Miller says. 122 years old Yitzchok Avinu was at the time when he became blind. 122. That's when when he became blind? He had a little bit of tzaras. What did Yitzchak Avinu go through? Now granted, I don't want to judge anybody in their tzaras. He did live for many, many years without children, Yitzchak Avinu. And we don't know how Esav was growing up in the house. We think that everything was fine and dandy and that Yitzchak Avinu was ignoring everything. Because how the Pesukim look at it. But it could be that he was under tremendous tzaras with Esav. You never want to compare one person's pain to another person's pain. But nonetheless, at the age of 122, Yitzchak Avinu had already gone blind. It was already, so to speak, going down a little bit, from the little bit of pain. The wives in his household, the wives of Esav, worshipping and doing something with the Avodah Zarah. Yaakov was strong and able to move until the day of his death. Till the very day of his death, he was still perfectly fine and everything was all there. Yaakov, you know, had pain in his life, says the Chasam Sofer, but he was able to take it the way a gadol would do and look at it as a gift. And how do we know this? Think about it. When things go badly, it seems like time is just so slow. It seems like everything is taking so long. Like you can't wait for this to be over, and yet it's just going and going and going and going. When he said that all my years were ma'at, that there were few in number, it's as if they flew. That means I had simcha throughout my whole life. Even the ra that I had in my lifetime, it seemed like it was nothing. Because I kept growing and I kept doing things with it. It felt like it was going all the way through. That was the simcha that he had. Notice, when he said that he worked for Rachel Imenu, for 7 years he waited to marry Rachel. He considered the years as if they flew by. As if they flew by. How does a person look at it like that if he's waiting to get married? Because every moment of Yaakovino's life he appreciated. Every single moment. He didn't look at it as if, oh no, this happened again. It was ma'at. It seemed small, even though it was royim. That's how the Chasam Sofer puts it. Even though there were bad issues in my life, I still flew through my life. Everything was besimcha. I was able to get through it. It's the idea of Nachum Yishgamzu. Yeah, what's up? So that's the Rishonim's derech has always been that way, to sort of say it in a pshat based manner, especially the Rashbam and the Sforno, the way they understand it. These ideas, the Chasam Sofer's idea of where no, it's not exactly that way. There's a hint behind the pasuk. It's hinting is from the drush behind the word ma'at. How could it be the word ma'at?
Years that short. Every one of the years, he lost a year.
So that's a different issue. That's the Das Kanim. We'll get to that because that's another reason. We are going to get to that. That's going to come up as well. As a side note, by the way, we know that Yaakov was connected to Rabbi Akiva. Yaakov is the same letters as Akiva, except you're missing an aleph at the very end. The reason for that is just like Yaakov, he started off in the beginning when he met Rachel. What happened? There was a rock on top of the well. And what did he do? He pushed the rock off the well. Rabbi Akiva also had the same status. What he did was when he first started learning, he saw the water going into the rock. And he was boring a hole into the rock and everything happened through there. The concept is that Yaakov, like Rabbi Akiva, was able to see the good in things even when bad happens. Meaning, kol d'avid rachmana l'tav avid, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for the good, that's Yaakov Vinu's line as well. They're connected in that way that he's able to see Dina and what happened to Dina and be silent and not say anything whatsoever, not complain and not say anything bad to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even though the Rishonim did have that derech, we do see the Rashbam this morning, the Ramban saying that, the way of the Chasam Sofer, the way he's learning it up and the way the Rabbi Victor Miller wanted to learn it up is that even so he saw the good in it, was able to accept it again. There were so few. I wish I could live it again, said Yaakovinu, even though they were right. That's the way that he's trying to say it, even though that's not the pusher way to go through it. And Tom Bedas, Rav Moshe Sternbach, says that this answer was more on the humble side, the humility side, than it was on something that was complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He felt he was never able to do what his father and grandfather were able to do, that his life had been filled with obstacles and pain. So he looked at Yaakov Avinu and Yitzchak and what they accomplished and what they were able to do and the gerim they were able to make and all the great things they did, and he said, my life, it's been filled with ra and I've been able to do nothing like my parents were able to do, like my father and my grandfather. I've been able to do so small, so few things, ma'at, I've been able to accomplish in my life in comparison to my father and my grandfather. So the reason why I haven't been able to accomplish is because of the ra that's been inside there. I've had to concentrate on my family instead of being able to go out and be able to help other people. The way the Rav Moshe Sternbach is saying is he's blaming his own shortcomings. He's not saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me a bad life and I'm complaining. I've had hard things in my life that allowed me to accomplish less than I've always wanted to accomplish. And for that reason, it's really Moshe for himself. But Moshe Sternbach is saying, and perhaps this is the answer by the others as well, Ellie, perhaps an answer to your question, that the way that he worded it was wrong. Since he worded it in such a way that could be understood as a complaint, even though he meant it as mussar for himself, that I wasn't able to do what I wanted to do. Therefore, he was punished for it, and severely punished for it on such a level. We say there's a possible idea that he was worried about Paro giving Minayin Hara. Such a powerful person. Look at these kids, strong, beautiful children that Yaakovinu had. And look at his age. He's able to live for so long. He was worried about an Ayin Hara. That Paro was not saying, Kama Yimei Shmei Chayecha, as in like, oh my gosh, you look so old. But rather, Kama Yimei Shmei Chayecha, how much have you lived in this world? You look like you've had an unbelievable life. To which Yaakovinu responded by saying, I don't want an Ayin Hara. Ma'at Barayin. I've had a lot of bad things that have happened. I don't want to get that Ayin Hara from you. Just trust me when I say, you don't want my life. Maybe that's a lesson to us, that we shouldn't be bragging to others about the good things that we've had in our life, and going over to other people and saying this, and you know, this is what I have, and this is what I got, and I got this, and I got that. People don't want to hear that, and people only give an Ayin Hara from it. There's only going to be an Ayin Hara from such a thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that Yaakovinu wanted to make it abundantly clear to Paro that he and his children had no plan on assimilating into Mitzrayim. Now, so remember the answer that we gave up above from Victor Miller. His answer is, his plan was to live as an Ivri, even in a hostile environment. He said to Paro, you think that I'm going to be intimidated by people like you who are going to tell me you can live such a better life? Come join us in the Egyptian lifestyle. Look at what you can have. Look at all these good things. If you just leave your ghetto and come join us, look at what you can get. You think that's going to sway me? You think that's going to get me to do what you want me to do? No way. No way, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. I fought before. I lived in Eretz Canaan. I lived by Lavan. I lived with Esav. And I fought and I became a person that I was. I stayed away from everything in that way. I'm willing to fight again. Even if it makes my life shorter, even if it's going to be hard, I've lived a life of Ma'at Varoyim, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. I lived a life where I planned this and I wanted this for myself, to be able to fight others and to keep my own way of living. And I'm begging you to let me do that now as well. I want to live in Goshen. Don't make me go anywhere else. Don't force me to be in Mitzrayim. That's what Yaakovinu was saying. Allow me to be separate from everybody else, and I choose the tsar that comes with that. I choose the pain that comes with living such a life. But Chassam Sofer also says that Paro was trying to give him a little bit of mussar here. You claim, he said to Yaakovinu, that you came here because you considered this land, you came here just for a little bit, you came to sojourn, to live here as a ger in the land of Mitzrayim. And you think that this land is inferior to your holy land of Eretz Canaan. You claim that you don't really want to live here, you'd rather go back to Eretz Canaan, that's what you really want. He looked at him and said, do you really think you're going to live long enough to go back to your homeland? Do you really think you're going to make it back there? Look how old you are. How old you are. How old are you that you think you're going to be able to make it? And Yaakov responded that there are three times that a person should worry that he's going to die. Three times that a person should worry and daven. Within 5 years of when either one of his parents died. That's number one. Number two, when you fulfilled all of your desires in this world and you have nothing left to live for, you have no other want, no other desire to be here in this world. Or number three, when someone asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take him out of the world because he's had so much pain. When someone asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please take me out, I can't stand this anymore. Those are the three times that a person has to expect that death is right there at the corner. Other times, you don't worry. And that, Yaakov Toparo, none of those apply to me. Why? My years are ma'at. I feel like I could live many more years. I feel like I could live. If I'm 130, I feel like I got 50 more years left in me. So I'm not ready to die just yet. You think I'm going to die here in Mitzrayim and not go back to Eretz Canaan? I feel like I could live many more years. There were Royim. I didn't deal with any of the garbage in the hevel of this world. I kept myself away from the taivas. I have not fulfilled my life filled with taivas. That's not the way that I am. And Loi Sigli Me'avosai, I'm not close to the years of my father's demise. My father's died at 175 or 180. I have to start worrying at the age of 170. I'm not there yet. I've got 40 more years until I have to worry about when I'm going to die. Says the Chassam Sofer, from those three, I don't have to worry about anything. So I'm not worried I'm going to die anytime soon. And he did. He lived for 17 more years in Mitzrayim. He never got to see the land of Eretz Yisrael alive, but he lived for 17 more years in Mitzrayim, which shows that there was something to what he was saying.
Because When did Rivka die?
I'm sorry?
Rivka?
Rivka died earlier. We don't know exactly when, but probably around the year 122. Yeah, 122, 123. If she lives until Devorah, depending on how old she is. Again, you have to deal with ages. If she was 3 when she married Yitzchak, then she was a little bit younger. She would have been in her 70s when she passed away. If she was older, 33 or 13 or whatever it was, then she's a little bit older. So either way, the oldest she could have been was 120 or something like that.
She'd be nervous then if she's...
It already passed it.
Five.
Already passed it. It's not within 5 years anymore because he's 130. Therefore, he didn't have to worry about it anymore. So therefore, everything's okay. And that's the idea behind it. Again, the Panach Raz and the Moshe Zakenu also say that he wanted to go back to Eretz Kanan. They said, you're not going to make it. The Kli Yakar said that when Paro saw that the Nile River rose up to greet Yaakov, he was expecting a guy to be this awesome guy. And when he looked at Yaakov, he was so disappointed. Oh, I wasn't expecting an old guy. I thought that the hunger was going to end for quite a while, but apparently you're going to die tomorrow, and then the rub is going to come back. The hunger is going to come back. To that he said, no, I've got a lot more years to me. I've got a lot more years. Everything's going to be there. And that's what he meant by such a thing behind that. The Ksav Sofer goes into that as well. The truth is, the Ksav Sofer says one of the best calls I think I've heard the most. Is because how old was Yosef HaTzadik at this time? When he became king over Mitzrayim, does anybody remember? 30 years old, he became king. So this is 9 years later. So he's right now 39, right? 39 years old. How old was Yaakov Avinu? 130. So he looked at Yaakov and he said, and he looked at all the other Shvatim who were just a little bit older than Yosef. The oldest brother, if Yaakov was 39, would have been 45. Reuben would have been 45 years old. And he looked at him and he said, whoa, what happened to you? Your oldest kid is 45. You look like you're 700. When did you get married? When did you get married? When did you have kids? Your kids are so young. You're so old. How in the world did this happen? What age did you get married at? And what happened? I can't believe you got married. It doesn't make any sense to me. And he's right. I mean, technically, Yaakovinu came down to Lavan at the age of 77. He got married at the age of 84. 84 years old. And he had kids from the age he made up for, right? From the age of 84 until 91, he ended up having about 20 kids. But regardless, if you have twins with all the boys all together, you have all the twins born, you had 22 kids, right? Right about that? 11?
Oh,
25. 22, because Binyamin wasn't born yet. 22, 23. You would have 23 kids in between the ages of 84 and 91. Now, that's awesome. I guess with four wives, it's more shyach, right? But either way, right, he made up for it during that time, but it's still crazy that that's the amount. He looked at him and said, you're such an old man. How did that happen? The Ksam Sofer doesn't explain the answer of the answer of Yaakov. I'm not so sure what that meant. It is something to do with, well, that's not called living. You're right. I didn't live a long life because until you have children, it's not called living, he claimed. That's not called living. So therefore, my real life of living was very short. I didn't have enough time while I actually had children. And then it is said he didn't understand. All of the Shvatim looked healthy. They looked big and strong as if they had been eating the whole time. But Paro knew better than everybody that everyone in Canaan was going through a terrible famine. People were starving there. People were eating grass in order to survive. So he looked at Yaakov and said, how are you successful? Kami Meshdechayacha didn't mean how old you are. It meant how are you living such a life of success when everybody else in Eretz Canaan was going down? How is this possible that you were able to do all this? You look robust. You look all robust. Even though you personally look a little bit old. But everybody else looks robust. What's going on? What did you do to merit such success over such a long period of time? Yaakov answered that no, my success has been short-lived and filled with fear. Although I've been successful in my latter years and everything has been going well recently, there's been a lot of fear in my life. Living with Laban was not easy. Living with Esav was not easy. Even living now in Eretz Canaan, knowing that at any point Esav could come up and kill me, there's always a fear that I'm living with at any point. He was even worried about the people of Shechem. Remember when Shimon and Levi killed the city of Shechem, their relatives wanted to kill Bnei Yaakov. They wanted to destroy the Bnei Yaakov for doing what they did. In fact, there is a whole medrash of the Melchanes Bnei Yaakov, how the Bnei Yaakov fought against all the relatives of Shechem, how they came up against them and they fought against them. It reads like a comic book. It's one of the greatest midrashim of all time. But nonetheless, there's a whole thing that goes through it. In that sense, Yaakov was right. He was living in fear throughout his whole life. Yes, I have a lot of stuff. Yes, things have been good, but I haven't been as good as I've been through. It hasn't been as well as it was. In Elena L'Shabach, though, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein says that Yaakov never meant it as a complaint similar to the ideas that we said before. Yisurin can make a person better if they're accepted by love by the recipient. If a person wants to drown himself in Yisurin, every person, every day, can drown themselves in their own Yisurin. Because there's always things that happen to everybody in every situation you're in. You always have reason to complain. You all have a tremendous amount of bracha, and we know that. Every single one of us has lived through tremendous things and has gotten tremendous things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But on the other hand, Yisurin are really hard. And there are situations that we go through and we sit there and we say, how are we supposed to deal with that? If you accept them and understand that they're coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that even though it's really, really hard right now, it's fine. These things are going to pass and everything's going to be okay. It makes everything a lot easier. I'll tell you as a side note, obviously my son with his surgery and the cast that he's in right now, it's really difficult. It's really difficult. More difficult than my wife, because I have basically nothing to do with it. My wife takes care of everything. But like, for a week, she couldn't go to work. For a week and a half, she's been doing everything for Nochi, right? And it's been really hard for him to get around. But that's one of those things where, you know, Yisurin happen, and you deal with it. And if you just say to yourself, oh, I can't believe I have this, then you're going to drown yourself in everything. If you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this to me for a reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this to me, I know that I can handle this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me an opportunity to grow and to become greater. Well, that's different. Then you already look at something as an opportunity. You're looking at it as a bracha. I'm looking at it as my son got more presents this Hanukkah than I have given him in my entire life from when he was born up until now. Amazing presents. Crazy amounts of presents. We have a moving dinosaur. We have a 3DS, a Nintendo, I think that's what it's called, right? We've got tons of games on Wii that people gave us. We have a little Rubik's Cube thing. We have a little Simon thing. They gave us, somebody else brought a game today, like Clue. I think somebody brought me Clue. They are annoying, but you put off the sound. So yeah, Clue. We have all these games that are sitting around the entire house. Somebody brought us a Jenga thing. You know, one of those earthquake Jengas. I thought Jenga was hard enough as it is. Now it's even harder. It's like an earthquake that goes off on the bottom. You ever seen this? I'm telling you, I have Toys R Us in my living room right now. And that, in and of itself, I now am an expert in toys. I could write reviews on almost every toy because I've been playing with them every night. Every single night. So it's all, a person accepts it that way. The Gra used to say that without Yisurin, we would never be able to survive Din and Rosh Hashanah. We wouldn't be able to do it. Rosh Hashanah, we survive because we have Yisurin. Because of Yisurin. And even the small ones, where you reach in your pocket and you realize your phone's in the wrong pocket. Or, where you have that phantom ring in your pocket, and you're sitting there like, oh, the phone's ringing again. You pick it up and it's not. And you're just like, oh, not again. That phantom ring, even that is Yisurin. It's small amounts. The Chofetz Chaim say that after we die, there's a great scale in the sky. Clearly this is not how it works, but it is, it's an idea based on the Gemara and Brachos. The scale in the sky deals with everything that a person did. And the first thing they do, based on Shemala, gets up there and they say, take all of this man's mitzvos, and all of the Melitzi Yosher, all of the Malachim that are part of your mitzvot, they come and they line up and they line on one side of the scale, and the scale is all weighed down at the bottom. They say, bring in the guys of Eris. And all of the Melitzi, unfortunately, the Kategorim, the Malachim that are evil and destructive, they come and they sit on the other side of the scale. Now there's a difference. The mitzvot that you do are not always the best way. You put on tefillin in the morning, but the tefillin that you put on are reluctant. You put them on, you're not really thinking about it, there's no love. The Eris you do are with love. Tremendous amounts of love. And you love doing them. And the amount of love that goes into them makes those Averas a lot heavier. These Malachim are different. These Malachim are heavy Malachim. And even though you might have done more mitzvahs than Averas, the Averas start weighing down and weighing down and weighing down the scale. You look at it and you start getting scared, says the Chofetz Chaim. Oyvei, how am I going to survive this judgment? What am I supposed to do? And then all of a sudden, they take out the Yisurin. The Yisurin come out. They say, bring the Yisurin and put it on the scale of the mitzvot. And all of your Yisurin that you went through in your life, everything that you did, somebody made fun of you in third grade. Your teacher said something bad about you in fourth grade to your parents. Everything you, that was probably your fault. That might not count as Yisurin. But everything you went through goes on the scale, gets weighed down on top of the mitzvot, and that gets slowly but surely goes down and down and down until it outweighs the Averis. Says the Chofetz Chaim, the whole purpose of Yisurin is to bring you to Gan Eden. Says Yaakovinu, yeah, my life has been filled with Ra, but look at me. I can accept this. I've been good with this. I understand, and you clearly see that I'm able to overcome this. Look at my kids. Look at how my kids are. If a person sits there and looks at his Yisurin and he says, oy vey, it's hard to be a Jew, you'll see what the kids become. But look, I've got a kid who's King of Mitzrayim. I've got a lot of kids who are tremendous, tremendous looking with all what they're doing. See, I succeeded because I accepted my Yisurin in the way that you're supposed to accept them, even though it seems that he called them Ma'at V'Rayim. That's the idea behind it. The Panach Raza. Now we're getting to the Midrashic ideas over here. Panach Raza says, Paro grew up in Avimelech's house. And in Avimelech's house, he remembered when Avram and Yitzchak came to visit. Both Avram and Yitzchak visited Avimelech's house. And that's what they did back in those days. The kings used to send their sons to other kings to go grow up and see the Midos and things that they were doing. When he saw this person who reminded him of Yitzchak Avinu from before, he looked at him and said, Kami Meshnei Chayacha, whoa, are you the same guy that came to Avimelech when I was a little kid? He must be a billion years old. How old are you? And he said, no, I'm not Yitzchak. I was his kid at the time. Yitzchak at the time had two kids that were with him when he went to Avimelech's house. Yaakov and Esav were young. They were under the age of 15 then, or right above the age of 15. Depends if Avram had already died or not. Either way, I was a little kid then. I was that little kid. That's what he was telling Paro. That means Paro was older. Yeah, that means Paro was older than him. Right? Or at least the same age. You're right. He would have been around the same age. That would be one thing. It's hard to say it that way, but that's one. Yelp Rubini brings another medrash.
Oh, there was a story in the family.
That's the obvious shot.
Early
Jew came in, right? This Ivri came inside. Yelp Rubini brings another medrash that Og Melech HaBashan was sitting beside Paro. Yaakov Avinu entered the room and Paro turned to him and said, I thought you told me that Avram Avinu was sterile, that he couldn't give birth. Clearly, this is a grandchild of Avram Avinu, right? This is his descendants. Look at all of his descendants. To which Og tried to give the family an Ayin Hara, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you will die by the hands of his great-grandchildren. That's what's going to happen to Og. That's one medrash. The medrash Rabbah and the medrash Gadol say it a bit differently. Og told Paro, you're right, Avram was sterile. So this must be Avram Avinu. And for that he said, if this is Avram Avinu, then he's over 400 years old. So he turned to him and said, how old are you? Because he can't be that old. And when she said, no, I'm not Avram. I'm Yaakov Avinu. I'm his grandson. That's what happened. He did have children. Time it across says a medrash. Now, I've seen this medrash before, but I haven't seen it regarding this. But Rechaim said like this. There was a door in Paro's palace that led into the throne room that was very short. According to the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Paro was an amah tall, a foot and a half tall, a very, very short king. Okay, so if he was that short king, he had a little door that only he could walk through. Everybody else, in order to get into the throne room, had to crawl through the door and come in to go see Paro. So they were already bowing down to Paro when they walked in. They were already bowing down to him, right? And Paro would be sitting in a little throne, like swinging his legs, I would assume, right? And as he's sitting up there, right, he's saying like, oh, thank you for bowing down to me on your way in, and nobody had a choice. Only once did that not happen, where the doorway just moved up. It was when Avram Avinu came in after he had taken Sarai. When he had grabbed Sarai and took her into his palace. Then when Avram came to, he was told in the dream to go see Avram or for the plagues, etc. Avram came in and the door went all the way up. When he saw, again, this means that Paro was extremely old and it was the same guy from before, whatever it means. And when Avram Avinu walked in, that's what happened. When Yaakov Avinu walked in this one time, he expected him to walk in and come crawling inside. And the door lifted itself up. It once again went all the way up. And he just walked right in. Yaakov Avinu walked right in. And he said, I remember this by Avram. Are you the same Avram Avinu that came in before? And he said, no, I'm not. I'm his grandson. That's not what happened over there. If I remember correctly, this might even be an Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Somebody wants to check that out. That might also be an Or HaChaim HaKadosh right before these psukim. Now that I'm remembering it. Anyway, the Das Tikkuni and the Chizkuni say what at least set up above. When Hashem heard Yaakov say these words, he said, I saved you from Esav and Lavan. I brought you back Dinah. I brought you back Yosef. And you complain that your life is filled with tzaros. How could you do that? For every word that's spoken here, you are going to lose a year of your life. There are 33 words in these psukim. 33 words in Ches and Tes. 33 words for 33 years of Yaakov Avinu's life. He lost. He was supposed to live to 180. He lived to 147. He lost 33 years, 1 year for every word that he had said that was incorrect. Now, first of all, that seems weird. We're including in these 33 words the words of Paro. Paro said, Kami Yimei Shnei Chayecha, how long are you going to live for? And those words are included in the fact that he lost 33 years. Why is he being punished for Paro asking him a question? Punish him for what he said. Don't punish him for what Paro said. What's the shot behind that? But the answer is, Yaakov Avinu looked so old that Paro had to ask the question when he saw him. And Yaakov is blamed for looking old enough that Paro had to ask that question. That's what Rechayim Shmulevitz answers. The Maril Diskin, and also in the Torah Shlema, answer a little bit differently. They both say that there are not 33 words. It's 33 letters. If you count from the word Ma'at Varayim, he goes, I forgot where it goes from. It is from the words Lohi Sigu. Lohi Sigu is Yemei Shnei Chayai Avosai Bimei Migurehem, is 33 letters. 33 letters. That's why it ended up being that he ended up losing the 33 years. It's not 33 words, it's 33 letters that go all the way through. But that's the idea behind it. There's a Kedusha Rim over here, but that's not for now. The Paris Yosef said, well, you know what, we can skip that as well. I don't think we want to go through that right now. The Malvim. Malvim indicates the same idea that the Tosefis Bracha says over here. He says the following. Yaakov looked at Paro after Paro asked him how old he was, and he corrected him. He said, you're wrong. You think that everything you do is called life? You think that everything is about your life? No. When a person does the wrong thing, that's not really Chaim at all. You're an animal. You're living an animalistic existence, and there's no life to what you're doing at all. You think that eating and drinking and sleeping is the ikar behind life, that you're living a good life by doing so? Said Yaakov, my life is filled with hard work, and I still never lived up to the expectations that I had for me or that the others had for me. And therefore, I've never really lived. I've only had migurai, years that I was able to live in this world. Here's the pshat. We all know the famous Chafetz Chaim story. We all know that when the Chafetz Chaim was visited by somebody, there was a guy who ended up visiting the Chafetz Chaim, and he said to the Chafetz Chaim, he walked into the house and he saw there was a table, there was a chair, there was a sparm, or whatever it is, and he said, where's your furniture? You know that story, right? What did the Chafetz Chaim say back to him? He said to the guy, where's your furniture? So the guy said, I'm just passing through here. I don't bring my furniture with me when I'm passing through. And the Chafetz Chaim said back to him, I'm also passing through here. I'm not living in this world. I'm just going through. So I don't need this furniture. I don't need the garbage of this world. I just need exactly what I need and to go. Now, again, that's the Chafetz Chaim. That's the Chafetz Chaim who had a bag that was sitting by his door for when Mashiach comes. Because he thought Mashiach could come at any moment, he thought. He knew that Mashiach could come at any moment, and he didn't want to be delayed by having to pack. He had that. Now, I'm sure we all have our bags packed at the door with our special Mashiach suit that we have inside there, waiting to go on the huge eagle that's going to be sitting at O'Hare Airport, right? Not a plane, but an eagle that we're going to climb onto the back and hold onto the wings and go through the sky like a Dreyu in The Neverending Story. I'm sure that that's what we're all looking for. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I do.
You do, right? That was a luck dragon. It was a luck dragon.
No,
anybody? Never-ending story? Come on, are we serious?
One of the longest movies in general when I was a kid watching.
It was never-ending. Yeah. Anyway, that happens to be... It's one, okay, yeah. Either way. If you go... Don't watch it. Anyway, but I don't remember. I don't remember. It's been a long time. Anyway, but it's the Dreyu, and it's the Luck Dragon, and whatever, and you can go on it. I assume that that's what's going to happen. I'm sure we have that over there. The pshat is that Yaakov Avinu, as well, considered this whole life as fleeting. He didn't look at anything over here. He didn't consider anything over here to be something important. He looked at his life, and he said, what, I really need this stuff? I don't need this stuff. I'm living my whole life just sojourning, just going through this world. He called it Migurai. You're calling how is your life? How did you do everything? I'm looking at his Mikurai. I'm passing through. I'm not going to do anything more than that. Rav Hirsch points out that it's weird. Kama Yemei Shnei Chayacha? How many days of years did you live? Who answers that way? You say, I am 36 years old. That's what you say. You don't say, I'm 36 times 365. Does anybody count their days of their life? Why in the world did Paro say, Kami Yemei Shnei Chayecha? Now, I saw that there was a Rishon that said that Yemei Shnei Chayecha is the typical way of saying it. That's how you say it in Hebrew. They're really saying, how long did you live? But it means Kama Shnei Chayecha. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. But I remember a story. When the Sfasam has passed away, the Sfasam has died in his low 50s, around the age of 52. And when he was being buried, the Imre Emes, this is the Sfas Emes' son, the Imre Emes, who took over the third Gera Rebbe, turned to one of his brothers, and he said to him, our father had a Arichus Yamin. And the person said to him, he's like, you're the new Rebbe, I don't want to argue with you, but 52 is not a Arichus Yamin. There's no Yerichus Yamin. And the Imre Emes turned to the guy and said, I didn't say he had Yerichus Shonim. I didn't say he had long years. I said he had Yerichus Yamin. He used every day to its fullest. Every day was a full day by my father. He might not have lived a long time. He didn't live that many years, but he lived many days, said the Imre Emes about his father, the Sfas Emes. And I think that applies over here as well. Yaakov made a tremendous impression, says Reverse, even on the few days that he had been together with Paro. And Paro, look, this may not have been the first thing that Paro told him. It could be that Yaakov was there for 3, 4, 5 days. And after those 3, 4, 5 days, Paro turned to him and said, Kama Yamei Shnei Chayecha. How many days have you lived in this world? He looked at him and said, I don't understand. How are you able to do this? To which Yaakov corrected him. And he says, listen, I haven't lived much, but I've been able to sojourn in this world. I was able to use my days proudly and correctly. That's what I was able to do. And when you put them all together, so here's what he goes. I can call the amount of days that I was able to actually fulfill and accomplish my mission, to go through my mission, have been very few in number. Meaning, my days that have actually been successful are when I fulfilled my mission. My mission in life is not like Avraham Yitzchak. It's to go in when there are terrible things going on and live through it. I haven't had too many days like that. My life, therefore, cannot be compared. It's ma'at the roim in the sense that those days that I needed to fulfill, that I needed to do my mission, that hasn't been enough. And that's the idea behind it. I did what I was supposed to do with the days that I was given. And those days are there. As Sagan of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says in the beginning of Parshat Vayechi, how did Yaakov know he was going to die? How did he realize he was going to die? Every single person has all the days written on his soul that he will ever live. If you had a good day, then that day lights up like a little light bulb. And if you had a bad day, then it darkens and it becomes black. If you haven't lived that day yet, it's like a clear light bulb that has not been turned on nor blackened just yet. Yaakov was able to know how many days he was supposed to live because he mamish treated every day like a new day, and every day was lit up except for the few days that he had left that were clear light bulbs. He was able to count his own life by seeing his own neshama, so to speak, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, was able to realize that. The last thing I'm going to mention over here is the Yalkut Reuveni. Yalkut Reuveni says the reason why he said I was 130 years old and what happened is that I'm finally able to fix up the problem that Adam Rishon had for 130 years. Remember, there's a medrash that Adam Rishon lived, gave birth to Cain and Hevel, and then Shase was born when Adam Rishon was only 130 years old. So what happened in between? What happened to those 130 years? He separated from Chava, did not have any children, and instead was molded Ruchen Shaden Belilin, was together with Lily, this demonic woman, or whatever you want to call it, and had this Zerah Levatala, and caused that to happen. Yaakov Avinu would not have Zerah Levatala. He waited 84 years to get married, and Chazal say, Kochi Bereshis Oni by Ruvain, that he did not have one drop of Zerah Levatala until he was 84 years old. At 84 was the first bit of Zera that he had had. He fixed what happened by Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon had Zera that shouldn't have been made, making into Shadim and evil in this world. Said Yaakov, I was able to fix that up. I was able to do that correctly. He knew he was going to live for the next 17 years to Gematria of Tov. He knew that he was going to be able to do the right thing, and thus, let's look at the numbers here. Moshe Rabbeinu was born at the age, at how many years into Mitzrayim? 130 years into Mitzrayim. During those 130 years, there were many, many, many children of Bnei Yisrael that were born. According to the Medrash, 300,000 or 600,000 kids were born from when Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim until he died. 17 years, 600,000 children. That's a lot of kids. That's a lot of kids. Think about that for a second. See, even if it wasn't that way, we know that Bnei Yisrael multiplied rapidly. There were hundreds of thousands of Jews. Hundreds of thousands. Some say 3 million that left Mitzrayim. 3.6 million, according to Yonah and Uziel, that left Mitzrayim. There were many, many Jews that were born. Those Jews, says the Yalkut Reuveni and the Chiddush Shearim, were all tikkunim, fixing up what Yaakov, what Adam Rishon had done during those 130 years. During those 130 years before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, they also fixed that up. And that allowed Bnei Yisrael to be the person, the people that they became. Moshe Rabbeinu is a tikkun of Shase. He is a Gilgal, they say, of Shase. Moshe Shase Hevel. He was the connector between Hevel that was born when Adam Rishon was one, and when Moshe Rabbeinu was when Adam Rishon was 130 and gave birth to Shais. Moshe Rabbeinu was the connector between those two, and the in between, the 130 years in between, was the neshamos that were born in between a Klal Yisrael that allowed for those tikkun and the good things to be able to happen. Like such an unbelievable line that happened over here. So let's go through it. Just the ideas of what we said. We asked the question. We went through the Rishonim to understand the Parshat Shot that he was complaining about. And the fact that he had such a bad life. We had Revigdor Miller, the Chassam Sofer, Rav Sternbach that tried to say no, he was not complaining at all. We had Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Chassam Sofer, the Kli Yoker. We went through the Netziv. Rav Zilberstein who explained that a person is supposed to accept his Yisurin with love, and that's how it goes through. We had the Midrashim from the Paneach Raz, the Yalku Ruveni, the Midragadol, and the Taimi Dekruah from Rav Chaim that mentions all the different Midrashim of what happened and why he said Kamiyah Shnechecha based on Og or based on what happened at the time. We have the 33 years lost by Yaakov because of 33 words or possibly 33 yet letters that were mentioned over here. And finally, we ended off with Rav Hirsch, the idea that when a person counts his years, he's not counting his days. Normally, Yaakov even counted his days, and the Yalku Ruveni that goes through this tikkun for Adam Rishon. Have a good Shabbos, everyone. We should be zochah to be able to accept our